Welcome to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland with guests, the most conspicuous of which will be Maestro John Demain, conductor of the Madison Symphony Orchestra, with three concerts coming up this weekend. Their usual times, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at the Overture Center for the Arts. And I know that this concert includes a good deal of music by somebody near and dear to you. Welcome, John Demain.
Thank you, Norman. Glad to be here.
You know, it's getting to the point where I'm thinking John Demain, George Gershwin, you know, what a great duo.
Well, I sort of feel like I've channeled George Gershwin in my life, but I've certainly, you know, had a chance to know Leonard Bernstein very well. So we've got this concert sort of bookends both of them.
Yeah, and a little bit more to boot, I believe.
Absolutely.
Some Sondheim in there. And you're going to be bringing in, it's four soloists, too.
Right. Garrick Olson, the younger.
Young Garrick Olson.
The younger, right? We have to say Garrick Olson, the younger, as
yeah,
opposed to Garrick.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he's going to get through life, you know, with the same name, even though different spelling, as another pianist who's also great.
And he plays so fabulously.
Oh, he's lovely.
Oh, my God. But and I have two really well-known Broadway performers. Ron Raines was on Guiding Light for 10 years in that soap opera. And then, of course, was most recently starred in, well, he just played Daddy Warbucks right now on Broadway.
Oh, that's
in the
a
revival
fun part.
Of Annie. But he was doing the lead role in the last revival of Follies. And we go way back to Houston Grand Opera days when we were doing Fledermauses and Merry Widows and operas, and then he sort of took a slight turn in his career and became more of a crossover performer, and then had quite a brilliant Broadway and television career, singing marvelously. And Karen Olivo, who now resides in Madison, won the Tony just a couple of years ago for her performance of Anita in West Side Story, and she's a dynamic Broadway star currently. And Emily Bersan is no stranger to Madison.
As or to public radio.
Or to public radio, as she's completing her time with the Chicago Lyric Ryan Young Artist Program, which is a program of just some of the finest young singers in America. And so we have the three of them, and then, of course, we have the wonderful Madison Symphony Orchestra, some 96 strong, you know, with a lot of extra musicians, because when you're doing West Side Story, you've got a huge battery of percussion instruments, and we've got guitar and banjo, and so we have our banjo for Porgy and Bess. So we decided, you know, what this concert was for me, you know, we had this All Gershwin concert 2 years ago, and it was really, really successful. And I thought, what could we do to follow up on that? Because actually, Gershwin's classical pieces are rather limited. I mean, you know, we've got American in Paris, we've got Concerto in F, Rhapsody in Blue, Cuban Overture,
Second Rhapsody,
and the Second Rhapsody, which rarely gets done, but is there. And we've gone through his basically his symphonic concert work. So I thought, well, I'd like to stress what a great songwriter he was.
Oh, and which is the core of what George Gershwin was. Yeah,
right.
Started out as a Tin Pan Alley songwriter.
It's Tin Pan Alley songwriter. And so we have, Strike Up the Band. And I got Rhythm Variations, which was from Girl Crazy. And the Overture from Strike Up the Band, which contains a lot of wonderful tunes.
Sure.
And then we have two Gershwin medleys that have some of the standards that we all know and love. Somebody Loves Me, Embraceable You, you know, Our Love Is Here to Stay. And then we have, I have to confess, I never realized that Gershwin created the Catfish Row Suite himself. I think it was like a promo for his opera, you know. I mean,
it's been done for years that way, hasn't it? Little bits of the opera, on the road.
What we normally do, if you're not doing the whole production of Porgy and Bess, we normally do the Robert Russell Bennett 50-minute thing where he compiled the greatest songs and the greatest choruses. But you never get to hear, other than that, other material from the opera. What is so significant about Catfish Row is that we get to hear big chunks of the actual score of the opera. And, one of the musicians said to me the other day, we've played this before. No. I said, you've played Summertime before, but whenever, it doesn't make any difference whether you play the Robert Russell Bennett arrangement or you do Catfish Row, we're playing the original Summertime. You know, the big point I like to make about Porgy and Bess in the soapbox that I find myself on is how upset I was with that Porgy and Bess that opened a couple years ago on Broadway starring Audra McDonald, because it should have never been called the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. It should have been called Diane Paulus's Porgy and Bess. It should have been called Bess for Audra McDonald.
How did they change it?
Well, they brought in a composer, they brought in an arranger and an orchestrator, and they absolutely changed. They changed some of the melodies.
And why would they do that?
I think that what led up to that was the Gershwins were frustrated that they couldn't. When we opened Porgy and Bess in 1976 in New York, we had reviews like you couldn't imagine. You know, we were the toast of New York. We recorded for RCA. I won the Grammy and all of those things. And there were the two leads, Donnie Ray Albert and Clamma Dale, who were magic. And the press would like to have made huge stars out of them. There's only one problem. Because we were doing it as an opera, they only sang three times a week out of eight performances. And the management never published when they were singing, because then the audience would only want to buy tickets to those three performances, and what do you do with the other five? So as a result, that had a four-month run on Broadway, and then we did a national tour, an international tour. It would have never frustrated George and Ira Gershwin, or their, you know, or Lee Gershwin, Ira's wife. It frustrated the heirs that are down the pike here, you know, the nephews that are left and things
really
like that, where they're just seeing dollar signs. And so what was on their mind, and why not? I mean, theater's a commercial venture. I don't begrudge them that they want to make money off of these properties, but my God, there's so many they could make money off of.
Yeah,
the
sure,
thing is that, that so they wanted to figure out if there was a way to create a Porgy and Bess that could be done eight times a week by the same performers. So to do that, they'd have to compress the keys. They wanted to make it more with it, you know, sort of a more modern way of doing the piece. So my problem is, when you do a Broadway show, oftentimes the composer is a tunesmith. He writes the songs and an arranger comes in, including George Gershwin's Broadway shows,
sure,
in which arrangers came in and they create the accompaniment as well as what instruments are going to play. And so creating the accompaniment would be the arrangement. Choosing the instruments that are going to play would be the orchestrations. Porgy and Bess was different. This was George Gershwin's classical opus, in which he created the arrangement and the orchestration. He decided what instrument was going to play every note of that piece.
Well, it was an opera, not a Broadway show.
Right. And so for these people to come along and feel that they have the freedom to change that, I don't mind as an etude. I mean, we have Peter Brook's Carmen, you know, we do things like that. But I do mind calling it the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, because if somebody hasn't done their homework and has not investigated the original and hears that, that's not George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess.
Well, yes, you know, to actually go to the extra effort of adding his name to it as if he had written it that way.
That's why
is
Sondheim
a little
was upset, you know. And the piece doesn't need any help. I mean, I just did the Seattle Opera was the last Porgies I did a couple years ago. And I mean, that audience is on its feet screaming. They're emotionally moved. It is such a great work. So it doesn't need any help. So I was really angry at that. But then I thought, you know, somebody asked me recently, did I think Leonard Bernstein fulfill his life's ambition? Was he frustrated? Did he make a mistake because he tried to be so many different things? I say he didn't try. He was many different things. But I really think that Leonard Bernstein wanted to be George Gershwin and saw himself as a modern day George Gershwin. I mean, think about it. Lenny gave us a film score. Lenny gave us Broadway shows. Lenny gave us concert pieces. In addition, you know, I mean, Gershwin was a performing pianist. Lenny also played a performing piano, and of course, he was a great conductor. But I really think that it was the press and other people who tried to pigeonhole him and criticized him. But they don't criticize George Gershwin, who seems to, you know, be perfectly comfortable in operating in different mediums. And so, and you know, I always tell the story that when Leonard Bernstein came to see our production of Porgy and Bess in New York, afterwards, he came backstage and he said, I've waited 40 years to hear this piece done this way. You've done it. Now I don't have to.
What a compliment.
But tell me, why did you cut out this and why did you cut out that? And he started talking about the most obscure parts of the score. He had never conducted this score, but he had studied it and he knew every note and it was from memory in his brain. That blew me away. But that was how, I think, what Gershwin meant to him. And certainly, you know, Sondheim with his great lyrics and you know, that tradition from Ira through Hammerstein and all of that. So I thought I would just, you can't, who has Jake Heggie? We just did Dead Man Walking. There's so much Gershwin in that score. So, I mean, you know, what American has not been influenced by George Gershwin? But we don't have, you know, all night to play everybody. So, I, you know,
but
chose
we'll get,
these
but
pieces.
We'll get to a few of them a little bit later. But right now, we have some other business to attend to. We'll be back shortly with John Demain and our piano and the music of George Gershwin and Bernstein and others right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are back, and welcome back to our Buck Studio. This is the Midday with John Demain at the piano. He's conducting a concert with the Madison Symphony this weekend that is devoted to George Gershwin's music for great measure, but then also Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim will be represented, and I think even one or two others. And we're coaxing out of him, as long as he's at the piano with some music, some of the stuff from the concert, and one of the big tunes, of course, from Porgy and Bess and the Catfish Row Suite, too, I assume, is Bess, You Is My Woman.
Right. You know, it's interesting about the Catfish Row Suite because when Gershwin, when I did the Houston Grand Opera production that became legendary and sort of restored Porgy and Bess into the opera repertory, we tried to put as much music back into the piece as we possibly could, but we still had a 3-hour time limit as far as performance was concerned. So, you know, Mazel the year before made the first complete recording, and then I had the second complete recording where we had all the music. But in recent years, we've been doing the 1935. We got a hold of the piano vocal score that when the show opened in 1935, and Reuben Mamoulian, the original stage director, had gone to Gershwin and had suggested that they had to get that show way down in time, and so they cut things. And the cuts they made were largely for theatrical reasons and not musical reasons. So many great things. For example, the show now. And Mamoulian played this overture, which has this theme in it, but they get right to the end of that with the trumpets blasting away, and they just jump right over to Summertime, and they do cuts like this all throughout, so that the drama is propelled forward, but we lose some great music. And one of the things that we lose, that we get a little of in the Catfish Row Suite, is Jazz Bo Brown, who's playing this ragtime piano based on this theme. I'll try to play a few notes from it. By now the chorus is singing wah wah, and so you get this whole, and this we're going to do a lot of this in the Catfish Row Suite, and so we'll play what really happens leading into, of course, the great Summertime.
Sure.
And and instead of singing it, our wonderful concert mistress will, you know, play the tune on the violin, actually way up here, with her sweet sound at the piano. So, you know, so that'll be fun. But I think it's such a great score. But I think that I'd like to play a piece that I just think is one of the most extraordinary pieces that out of the opera, which is Bess, You Is My Woman. Do we have time to play it? Do I have?
Sure.
Yeah. There's been a lot of excitement going on, and Gershwin gets us calming down. And this, by the way, is in the suite. Cello solo. This is really Porgy's proposal of marriage to Bess.
Quite the harmonies in there.
Oh, amazing. And that this is so Ravel, isn't it? This part where...
Yes, sure. Well, he was very aware, of his Ravel, wasn't he, Gershwin?
Right. So, it's just Stravinsky, Ravel, Berg. Amazing.
Well, we're going to hear more from the music of George Gershwin, as well as Leonard Bernstein, Stephen Sondheim, and who knows where else we'll go with John Demain at our piano here in our Buck studio. All of that, and of course the 12:30 quiz question, after this, here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And now back with John Demain and our studio audience here in our Buck studio. And we're referencing a concert that's coming up this weekend, Madison Symphony, with John Demain conducting, and Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, Sunday afternoon at 2:30, music of George Gershwin and Leonard Bernstein, Stephen Sondheim, and one or two others, familiar tunesmiths, were going to be represented in that concert, too. Harold Arlen, I think, right?
Right.
Yes.
That old Black Magic.
Ah, okay. Of Over the Rainbow fame and so on. We've been talking about Catfish Row. This is George Gershwin's own suite from his opera, his one and only opera, Porgy and Bess.
Right, and we get to hear some of the music that we don't normally hear, including the prelude into the whole last act before Porky comes home and from jail and finds out that Bess is gone. We get to hear the hurricane music. Whoa. That leads up to the hurricane, and we get to hear the fugue where Crown kills Robbins. I mean, these are real examples of the writing from the opera, which are quite difficult and really quite spectacular. So that's great. I also love Gershwin's songs. And the thing that I like about some of these songs, and I think is always fun, is, you know, you get these little verses before the chorus comes in, and you never quite know what's that going to be, you know? So there's this one that, let me see if I can pick my way through this. Our romance won't end on a sorrowful note. Though by tomorrow you're gone, the song is ended, but as the songwriter wrote, the melody lingers on. They may take you from me, I'll miss your fond caress, but though they take you from me, I'll still possess. Anybody know? The way you wear your hat. The way you, so that's, you know, that was one
I feel like I'm in the presence of Fred Astaire here, you know.
Right. And then the other one that I think is, let's see if I can get this one out. The more I read the paper, the less I comprehend. The world with all its capers and how it all will end. Nothing seems to be lasting, but that isn't our affair. We've got something permanent, I mean in the way we can.
And after that comes...
Our love is here to stay. Uh-huh. Not for a year. So that was the one into that one. So that's... But I'm not going to give away... These medleys are marvelously arranged by Larry Moore. And I'm going to save them as a surprise.
Okay. You know. Yeah, sure. So, but the bottom line is there will be a lot of hit tunes that come forth from these.
Then we move into the second half, and I thought, we'll open with Candide, that famous overture.
Sure.
But that actually opened on Broadway, I believe, in 1954, and Lenny made a concert overture piece out of that overture. I mean, it's really
It's a great it's a little 4 minutes of wonderful 4 minutes, music, Candide overture.
And he led it in 1957. And, of course, one of the great tunes that includes those melodies from the overture is Glitter and Be Gay, which I can't sing because it calls for a coloratura soprano.
So do we have a soprano in the house? Preferably coloratura?
All that. All that, which is both in the overture, and then we hear it as it's set in the operetta. And Candide is really an operetta. I remind everybody that the original cast starred Barbara Cook. I had an occasion, this is kind of interesting because one of the last things that Lenny did before he passed away was make a recording of Candide. And when I heard it, I was kind of shocked because, first of all, they had put back a lot of new music that had been not heard since way back in 1954 because Hugh Wheeler came around and did a book in the 70s that Hal Prince had a big successful staging. And so there's currently now five different versions of Candide.
That many.
Including the Scottish National Opera version, of which I think is the basis for Lenny's last recording. And they told us... because everybody, whenever we want to do the show, we want to mix and match. We want to take from this and take from that because it's a problematic show. And so I was told by Harry Crowd, his publisher and his personal manager, that I could pick any version I wanted, but I couldn't. You couldn't mix them up because of the royalty rights of all the different lyricists.
It's complicated,
that have been, you know, over the life of the piece. So Lenny recorded it. And I remembered, I thought, I feel like I'm listening to Mahler. I mean, like the Mahler Fifth. It was the slowest Candide you could ever imagine.
The way so Bernstein slow. Conducted it.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. And so when I was doing the show, I was doing the show in Rome, of all places. And Harry came over, and of course, I know the original so well, and I've done the show in different versions. But I said to him, just out of curiosity, because I said, you know, young people will put on that recording and they'll think that's how the show goes. And I said, is that how we're supposed to do the show? Is that right? And he said, no, you must not do it this way. He was really in the last throes of his emphysema and his illness, and he could barely get up onto the podium. And he said it was all just...
He couldn't keep up the pace.
He couldn't keep up the pace, and he just was, you know... indulging in the, but I have to say, it is so beautiful. It has nothing to do with the pacing of the show, but as a recording, it is just absolutely gorgeous. And so it was fascinating to me. And so then we'll do a little Harold Arlen, and then Sondheim. I wish I could. I mean, I think Sondheim is just an extraordinary composer. We all know that he's a great lyricist, and I'm sure that, you know, that goes all the way back to his affection for Gershwin, Ira Gershwin, and Hammerstein.
He wrote the lyrics, did he not, for West Side Story?
He wrote the lyrics for West Side Story. As a matter of fact, they wrote a lot of lyrics for West Side Story. The piece was really, you know, a lot of people say, you know, it's really an opera. Well, it's not an opera. I mean, they dance, they talk, and they sing a couple songs. But at one time, it was almost an opera. It was all, they sung the prologue, they sang the dance at the gym, they sung everything. And it was Jerome Robbins who came along and said, nobody's going to listen to all that. Too many words. We'll sing this, we'll dance that, we'll talk this. And he fashioned it into the hit that it was. But Sondheim went on to his own. I next year with Madison Opera, we're doing Sweeney Todd of Sondheim's as part of our season. And I don't know whether we've announced Madison Opera season next year.
Oh, my gosh, it's a scoop.
that may be a scoop. But, you know, and I had the great privilege of doing Sweeney Todd at Houston Grand Opera right after it closed on Broadway. And Sondheim came out. And when that show first opened, there were all of these articles in the New York Times. Is it an opera or is it a musical? Is it an opera or is it a musical? And so I had him captive one night. He was hungry. He wanted to eat after a rehearsal. And so we went over to Chinatown in Houston and we were eating, and I couldn't resist. I mean, I felt like such a tourist, but I had him captive. And I said, well, I hate to ask you this, but is Sweeney Todd an opera or a musical? I figured I'm conducting it. I have a right to ask it. So he said, you know, I think it's where it plays. He said, if it plays in an opera house, people will hear it as an opera. There's only 20 minutes of dialogue. It's all sung. And it uses really good voices in many of the roles, really trained voices, you know. And then he said, I think when people, you know, go to a Broadway house, they expect to see a Broadway show, so they think it's a musical. He sort of said, I write pieces and then find the right venue for them. But I really think that he gets it. I mean, when he writes a show, he writes for a variety of vocal styles, in which I think we need to do more of that with our contemporary opera, which is to use some of the different vocal styles that permeate the 20th century, and including the style of singing that was popular in the 19th century. And he has fused that. But also, like Gershwin, the scope of his writing, you know, where Sweeney Todd is rather heavy, and then he gave us Passion, which is really like an opera and all sung. When he did Follies, it was a throwback to the Ziegfeld Follies. And, of course, Gershwin loved writing for those kinds of shows on Broadway, too. There was that incredible... sun comes up, I think about you. So low key for the ladies. coffee cup, I think about you. I want you so. It's like I'm losing my mind. The morning ends, I think about you. I talk to friends, I think about you. And do they know? It's like I'm losing my mind. So then you have to come to the concert to hear the rest.
But that's the way this works, you know.
It's such a beautifully communicative lyric, you know, that the loss of this lover, you know, and Kent everywhere she turns. And Karen Olivo will sing it marvelously. And then, of course, we turn to the great West Side Story in having a boy like that, you know, who'll kill your brother, and with that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ending. I wonder if I have it here. And then, of course, the symphonic dances. Now, what I think is a beautiful, interesting about the symphonic dances, of course, is that that came along. You know, Bernstein fashioning a symphonic suite from West Side Story came after. And I always like to tell the joke of I was doing, in which you, West Side Story, I did the 25th anniversary production, and we were in Houston, of all places, playing for a month around Christmas time. And our sound man was Jack Mann, who was Hal Prince's sound man for all of his Broadway shows. And I'll never forget, he came to me afterwards and he said, you know, I've been working on the show for a month. And he said, it sounds so great. He said, the orchestra and the cast is just perfectly balanced. But I've tried everything I know. And I've tried miking and everything. And I just can't get the violas to into the mix. I just can't hear the violas. I can't find them. And I said, Jack, he didn't write for any violas in West Side Story. He only wrote for violins, cellos, and basses. So I said to, and I asked Lenny, I said, why? And he said, well, you know, when you have a small complement, you know, we're going to have a very big complement of strings on stage.
Plenty of violas.
In the pit, he said, when you have a small complement of strings, he said, the violas get lost. And so what he did instead is he wrote for high cellos and into the viola range.
Just covered
to get more, you know, bang for his buck. But I'm happy to report that when he wrote his symphonic dances, he put the violas back in and a lot of other things. I mean, he really made it into a great work for symphony orchestra. I just think that the beautiful melody that happens at the end of A Boy Like That, you know, that beautiful thing where she sings, I have a love that, you know, I can't. And it's all that I have, right or wrong, what else can I do? I love you, and everything I do. That melody is so great. And then when they reach the climax, the orchestra takes that over in what I think is that big climax. And then back to the end. So beautiful. And this... that seventh that's there all the time, you know. And
it's very conspicuous, isn't it?
It's very. He loved that interval, and of course, it's no more aware and present than in There's a Place for Us, as we all know, because you have that seventh
right.
Again, and he just loved that. And he loved to do things like, he'll go this, and then. And then again. So he has those sevenths going on all the time while the melody is going on. So he's weaving that in there. And that's very much a characteristic of his writing, and particularly for West Side Story. Well, I can't play them. I can't play all those things with the mambo. Those are big orchestral pieces. But we have...
Yeah, if we have another, say, 60 seconds or so, what would you be able to quote for us?
From the piano?
Indeed.
Oh, I just think that I love this. I can't really play anything less. But I just love the story of this, that which is, of course, Maria made into a cha-cha.
Yes.
And I just love to tell the story of the 25th anniversary production. You know, this is in the show, it's. And Tony's doing this dance step. Well, Lenny, who never conducted West Side Story, he wrote it, but Maurice Perez conducted it. Lenny remembered having done the symphonic dances, you know, and conducted and recorded it many times. So he comes to see the preview in Miami, and he says to me, "That's way too slow. I never wrote it to be that slow. It has to be..." So tonight I want it to be faster. So I couldn't find Jerome Robbins, who was a tyrant, you know, and who's really in charge, to tell him that Lenny wanted me to go faster. Didn't dawn on me to tell the performers. And so that night I go there, and Tony actually slips trying to do the step at that tempo. And Robbins came like a laser at the end of the first act at me, and he knew how consistent I was. I was younger then, right? I was really consistent with my tempos. He didn't blame me. He said, "If Lenny wants it that fast, I'll write it out of the show. Who knows if he even composed it?" And I said, what do you mean? And he said, "Well, you know, we have dance rehearsal pianists that we work with, and with a dance rehearsal pianist in a room, I might say to him, what can you do with Maria?" And you know, and so maybe they fashioned a show. I'm sure Lenny came back in and then composed it and really shaped it into something. But and so at the end of the performance that night, I said, "Would you at least talk to each other?" And they looked at each other, and they both sang it at two different tempos and then said, "Right." and I thought, what do I do? And then about 5 days later, Lenny said, "Look, we're only doing this revival because Jerry agreed to do it, give him what he wants." And so, okay, I can go to the pit now and know what to do.
Well, John Demain, thanks for joining us today. It's been a right pleasurable experience. Nice to have you with us.